Greetings from the glass cage of emotion. I just tried to tweet out this image. It's me, Greg. Welcome to the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast. No Jeffy today, but we have a very guestful show. Roger Millions will join us. JP from Japers Rink will join us. And also the lovely and talented Ryan Lambert will join us to talk about all things NHL, including the Calgary Flames and Washington Capitals. But this is the first time I've done this show from the brand spanking new Yahoo offices in the former New York Times building. And let me tell you something right now. So when I got hired at Yahoo many moons ago, I just worked at home all the time. There wasn't really an office in Washington, D.C. For me to go to. It was mostly just an office that was there for lobbyists and marketing people. And then, I started to come to New York more and work out of there when I started doing more video stuff on NBC. To pour a little bit out for Sports Dash, if you will, and also on Yahoo.com. So then I started coming to New York more and working out of their New York office, which was really kind of like a downer. Like, it was sort of like the office that Keanu worked out of at the beginning of The Matrix, where it was drab and cubicle-based, and you felt like everyone was sort of trapped in their own felt-walled prison. And now the Yahoo has left that building, and they are now located in the former New York Times building. And now it actually feels like I'm working for what you would call a .com, I think, officially. I officially now work for a .com because I'm looking around this office, and, dude, it is like what you'd expect. It's like shuffleboard games and goofy little colors and also, more to the point why I'm telling you this, I am doing the show in a conference room that has glass on both sides, and everyone's looking at me as I do the show. It's very sort of awkward. Sometimes I find rooms where I can kind of hide and not be here and just sort of like do the show and nobody looks. But right now it's like I am on display. I am like a hyena at the zoo as we do this show. But you know what? It's fine. I don't even know if the room is soundproof, so that's going to make for a really good time. The picture of the glass cage of emotion is on the Twitter feed now, my Twitter feed, and I hashtagged it MVSW. As you should, if you have any questions of the day stuff, puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com, at Wyszynski on the Twitters, hashtag at MVSW, and obviously anything on the Reddit page as well, you can go ahead and dial in as well. A couple things from last night's games. The Blues are pretty good. I don't know if you guys know that. And as we spoke about yesterday on the show, the dimensions of the offense change dramatically when they get secondary scoring, as they have with Vladimir Tarasenko, who scored another beauty last night to beat Corey Schneider, and they win 1-0 at the Devils on a game that probably acted as a televised Somonex or Valium for most hockey fans that were watching it on NBC. It was not the most scintillating time, but a close game. And again, you know, that one goal that they weren't getting in years past when they would play a tight playoff series or something along those lines, they're getting them now from guys like a guy like Tarasenko, and that's going to make all the difference come playoff time. They're a pretty impressive team, I think. A couple of housekeeping items. First off, the Jack Johnson hit on last night on Tolusti. So Tolusti's okay. Johnson gets a hearing. It's one of those hits that's tricky. Like the Ferentz one that we talked about yesterday was a lot more straightforward. I mean, that was a bit more of a headhunter. This one is like you feel like Jack Johnson's going for a full body hit. But at the same time, he definitely makes principal point of contact with the head snap back. And it was also a hit that maybe shouldn't be delivered when a guy's in a vulnerable position like that. They're obviously looking to get rid of it. But no priors, no injury, but he gets a hearing out of it. This was one where you're almost like, if you're someone like me and you are a little wary about hitting being taken out of the game, you're thinking to yourself, okay, this one might be one they kind of let go. But if you get an illegal check to the head penalty in the game, chances are that's going to result in supplemental discipline. So I imagine this is going to be a two-gamer for Jack Johnson simply because of the timing of it and the fact that he was given the penalty during the game and the fact that he has a hearing. I don't think they're going to necessarily go ahead and have a hearing without giving a guy a suspension. So that's one. And then the other thing, too, is, you know, listen, you guys know where I stand on coaches' challenges. It's 2014, okay? We don't have flying cars. We should damn sure have coaches' challenges in the National Hockey League. There's no reason not to. And that Penguins-Minnesota game, it hurts a little bit more sometimes when you feel like it could be a goal that changes the complexion of a game. And that's a 3-1 game at the point where Mikko Koivu scores that goal and it gets waved off. Because Granlund's in the crease. And this isn't to say that the goal should have counted. There was a lot going on in that play. It's to say that there needs to be some oversight, and there needs to be an extra couple of eyes on every play when we get situations like that, and the game official makes one call, and then the replay might tell you something otherwise. Because you could look at that play 1,000 times and come up with, you know, 1,000 different interpretations. Granlund was in the crease. He didn't allow Greiss to make the save. Granlund was shoved from behind on Letang, and then Letang laid on his leg and he couldn't get up. And that's why Greiss couldn't get up, because it was like a crazy hockey Oreo sandwich with Granlund in the middle. I mean, there's other ways to look at that. And I think that having the war room put an extra set of eyes on it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. It would not be the worst thing in the world. Or at the very least, giving Mike Yeo a chance to challenge it. That's the real problem, man. It's like there are plays that are not reviewable that maybe should stay not reviewable, because I understand that the one of the hesitations from the NHL on these reviews and these replays of goalie interference is how slow the game would get. And my God, can you imagine? I would have spent an extra 20 minutes at the rink to watch one of these games and get the calls right. So I understand not wanting to slow the game down, but at the same time, though, man, give the coach a mechanism to challenge the play. It's a game-changing play right there. Give them a chance to review it. Maybe they come back with something that says, hey, it's goalie interference, call was right. And you come back and say, well, it should have been a goal. I don't know. Just give the coach a chance to challenge it, because the idea that you can't is a little nonsensical in 2014. But overall, another interesting night. The Blue Jackets struggles continue. You kind of feel bad for them. Carolina moving up. I did not realize that Carolina was getting as healthy as they're getting, and that might be the time for them to make a little move. Dallas struggling a little bit. Vancouver, another impressive win. Ryan Miller, by the way, now 9-0-1. Doesn't exactly have Vezina numbers to go along with that per se, but 9-0-1 is a pretty healthy mark to have out of the gate for Ryan Miller and the Canucks. I had to do some award stuff this morning for Yahoo Video, so my mind is kind of on that. And listen, I know it's October, and Dave Lozo's already yelled at me for talking about MVP stuff in October, but if you had to think about it, if you really had to think about most valuable players through 1 month of the season, it's a statistic award, so obviously Sid's going to be there, and Stamkos is going to be there, and Corey Perry's going to be there, and I guess Kessel should be there, and I'm not going to do the usual must-be-in-a-playoff-spot disqualifier. We'll just put everybody's name in a hat, but like I said yesterday, man, Henrik Zetterberg, top to bottom, has been probably the most valuable player I've seen to his team this season, and the amount of stuff that he's done in winning games on his own, not only through the points he's put up, but also through the little things he does as well. So it's been really fun to see him playing at the peak of his skills again, because I was really worried. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I picked Detroit to miss the playoffs, is because I thought that Henrik Zetterberg's back was going to give out. Maybe it still will, but so far so good through the first part of the season. Laviolette's been the Adams guy. Pekka Rene, Darcy Kemper have been the Vezina guys. Weber, by the way, Shea Weber's playing over 27 minutes a night. He's playing Ryan Suter minutes right now for the Nashville Predators. And it would not surprise me in the least if they stay within earshot of contention that he would be up for the Norris this season as well. So it's interesting to see so far. By the way, Mark Giordano of the Flames. I'll talk to Roger Millions about that coming up in a second or two. That's a guy who's really fascinating to me, because to me, he put together a season or was putting together a season last year that may have been his breakout, that may have resulted in his first Norris nomination, but it didn't work for him because he got hurt, and it cost him a shot on the Canadian Olympic team too, probably. So the Mark Giordano redemption tour on this Calgary Flames team that all of a sudden is doing great things is something to watch. And, you know, the rookie race, it's Forsberg, it's Pearson right now. It'll change dramatically over the next few months. I still think Drouin at 6-1, those are the Vegas odds we talked about yesterday, is a pretty good bet. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on awards. I agree with you. It's nonsensical. It's way too early. to be talking about this stuff. It doesn't mean I didn't shoot a video. It doesn't mean you won't be reading about it on Puck Daddy. Because sometimes you just have to talk about stuff. Two things real quick before we get to Guest World. The first is, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show yesterday, but I saw the giant big hole in the ground in Las Vegas where they're going to put the hockey arena. It is steps off the strip. It's going to be through like a shopping area that's going to be near New York, New York. You'll be able to see the arena from the strip. It's going to be a beauty. And the location of it makes you think that maybe they could pull this thing off. I don't know. I've got some reporting to do on this for a story later this week on the Vegas dynamic, having been there and having talked to some of the locals about their thoughts on an NHL team coming there. It's very interesting. But seeing them put shovels in dirt and where the arena is going to be, your mind can't help but wander to, well, perhaps. And there you go. Hey, Maddie, is our guest there? Here's some feedback. Oh, okay, gotcha. I didn't know if your mic was open or not. Sorry about that. Sorry about that, everybody. And the other thing is, the story is on Puck Daddy now. It's really a glorious one. Sean Avery throws a tantrum and quits his play 2 days or 3 days before it opens. He was scheduled to make his off-Broadway stage debut in Positive is Negative, playing the critical role of best friend to the main character. And apparently, this is according to Page Six, and rarely does Page Six ever get anything wrong. According to Page Six, Avery was offered a slice of pizza from a stage manager, misheard the stage manager, and thought that she called him an a-hole, and then stormed out of rehearsals in a huff and basically quit the show a couple days before it was supposed to start. It is pretty amazing. And he also pulled out the Do You Know Who I Am card, which is pretty fantastic. Because what has Avery been since his playing days but, you know, a Page Six item, and now he is again. So Sean Avery quits his play in the latest twist and turn of his post-playing days career. It's funny. Avery didn't like me. Avery's kind of communicated through back channels that he really doesn't appreciate me writing about him anymore. I'm wondering if I'm going to hear anything about him from him today. But I've long been an Avery fan. Like, I think he's one of the most fascinating dudes that we've ever had in this league, not only because of the style of play, not only because of the unique set of skills that he brought to the game, but also because he's a guy who was always very interesting beyond hockey topics. I mean, you know, the thing I'll always say about Avery is that, like, no matter how you feel about the guy, and there's a lot of people that despise him, many of them probably friends of mine from New Jersey, but he was one of the guys who jumped out to the forefront on the gay marriage debate before it became kind of cool to do so, and I'll always respect him for that. He put his neck out on the line on a lot of stuff when it came to those issues, and you always have to respect him for that. But now he's the guy who quit a play over pizza. Joining us now is a man who will never quit over a slice of pizza because he's one of the most hardest working men in the business. He is Roger Millions, joining us now in the Merrick vs. Brzezinski podcast. It's just me, Greg, today. Jeff is big timing. He's got many Sportsnet things to do, Roger. So here I am today on my own.
What a surprise. What a surprise. No, no.
I know. Well, you know, it's always now, it's hanging out with Strombo and suit fittings and the whole thing. I don't even know. It's like I don't even know the man anymore, but what are you going to do? The Calgary Flames, sir, I think are one of the best stories in hockey so far. What has surprised you about this team? What are they doing right?
Well, that's a really good question, because the obvious answer is they work real hard and that they never give in, that kind of stuff. But I think that they've made some major strides in a couple of areas. First of all, Jonas Hiller has been fantastic. His numbers bear that out. And it's when you have goaltending in this league, it can cover up a lot of things or give you time to develop things that you need to become a winner. And I think it's kind of been a combination. Jonas has been really good. Kari Ramo was just fine in his games before Jonas just simply took over. But that's allowed this team, in spite of a lot of injuries like everybody else has, veteran guys like Raymond and Stajan and Colburn and Backlund, to develop some young talent that have really surprised. When you combine all those things, that's why they've off to a good start. And then I'll throw one other thing to you, and that's the fact they haven't played a lot of Western Conference teams. When that happens, we'll learn a lot more about the Calgary Flames, to see where they are. Because I think that's the ultimate test, playing those teams in the Pacific Division that reside in California, playing Vancouver a little bit more often, then you'll find out even more. But it's been an interesting story with a lot of chapters.
So you're saying that 5 foot nothing Johnny Gaudreau might have a harder time navigating around the Western Conference teams than he has against the Eastern Conference teams?
He might. We'll see what he does. He is a unique talent. He has an ability that a lot of players don't have, and that is he sees the game. Sorry, I'm in downtown Tampa when you call.
Oh, no worries.
Long and short of it, he sees the game a little bit differently. He sees it quickly. He allows himself the opportunity for people to kind of come at him, and he'll dish it off. So because he sees the game well, he has some success. But I want to see him play Anaheim. I want to see him play Los Angeles. I want to see him play San Jose and then the St. Louis's and the Chicago's on a more regular basis. Then we're going to learn a lot more. But you know what? What he has done has been relatively impressive, just because of his size. But he has a gift, a unique gift, and we'll have to watch it closely to see how it matures. Some people, best comparison, Sportsnet's producer out of Vancouver, Greg Shannon, who knows a lot of former Canucks, says he reminds him of Cliff Ronning. Cliff Ronning had 1,000 points in his career. If he can get halfway there, that's a pretty good story. And that's an interesting comparison. I saw Cliff play junior in New Westminster back in the early 1980s and saw him mature. And if that's a comparison, then I'm sure he'll take it and run with it.
For sure. And obviously it would also make him a hell of a video game player. A guy that I opened the show talking about because I'm a big fan of the way he plays the game, and I really felt like he got shafted last year because of that injury. Mark Giordano, with 13 points so far this season, has really picked up where he left off, hasn't he?
Fantastic. Better than that, I think he's now in the top five in the NHL in defensemen. Yeah, everyone will roll their eyes in Eastern Canada and the Eastern Seaboard. I know. You don't see him that much, but he's been that good, and his numbers bear the bout. Not just statistically in terms of offense, but how many minutes he plays, how many tough minutes he plays against the best players. He's been that good. And when you couple him with, I think, an emerging superstar in TJ Brody, who was a fourth-round pick, and of course people kind of wondered if he was ever going to be anything. He's been just terrific this year. Gets the new contract. Giordano has been everything. I know from players that I'm close to, they just think he walks on water. They'll do anything for him. He's an ultimate leader. He's become a very good player. The Flames will extend him when they get the first opportunity, which would be July 1st of 2015. He has 1 year left after this year. You'll see him extended because he means that much. He's a terrific player. I just don't know what his ceiling is, but I do know one thing. He's the heart and soul of this organization, and not just on the ice, but off as well. That's how highly thought of he is. He wants to play with the Flames for a long time period, and the Flames want him here because he means so much.
Speaking of re-signings, by the way, I just wanted to let people know about some breaking news. Marc-Andre Fleury, 4 years, $23 million dollar extension for the Penguins goalie, who was in his last year of the contract. That's a 5.75 cap hit annually for Fleury, so we'll break that down in a bit. That's a good, he's proved it, man. And it's tough to find that kind of goalie. I know he's got his detractors. But what are you going to do? And speaking of goalies, I mean, you brought up Hiller before. You know, a lot of people thought that Calgary might be in the McDavid sweepstakes, that Calgary might be in the Eichel sweepstakes, that they were not going to compete as much as others this season, to put it politely. But when you sign Jonas Hiller, that's you bringing in somebody that is a pro, that it knows how to stop a puck, that has carried teams on his own in the past. And I always felt that was sort of counterintuitive, if that's what the plan was, to bring in a guy like that, and we're starting to see exactly what this guy can do when he's on.
Yep, you get good goaltending. He's made big saves. Last night he had a tough one go in Washington in the second period and rebounded off the end boards, and a lot of goalies would have crumbled, but he played even better at that point, and he absolutely robbed Tom Wilson with 1.8 seconds left to go. There's no way that puck should not have been in the net, but it didn't go in, and that allowed the Flames to win in overtime. So he's given them confidence. He's allowed Giordano and Brody maybe a little more latitude to become a better pairing. Chris Russell, and I think people would have laughed at this a couple of years ago, has probably become one of the best defenders in the league as well. Sure, he's a little guy. He's only 5'10", but he's been terrific. In fact, even Dennis Wiedemann, who people have questioned for many, many years, and to be frank with you, he's an interesting case study having to get to know him over the last 3 years. He's been better because of Chris Russell. So their top four has been darn good, really good. And as a result, it's allowed them the ability to win some hockey games. And that's another factor. Hiller has been good, but he's allowed others to mature their game and play well.
Yeah, and it all starts in the crease, as they say. And did you, coming into the season, think that they were maybe in more of a rebuild, of a holding pattern season with the hopes of maybe getting a lottery pick than they've turned out to be, at least through the first months of the season?
Yeah, I did. I thought that's where they would be going, just because of the age of some of their veterans, and I didn't know that they'd get such good contributions from young players. You mentioned Johnny Gaudreau. He's been one of them. How about Josh Juris out of Burlington, Ontario, mm-hmm. who went to Union College? Wow, that kid has got 5 points in like 7 or 8 games played, and he can play any role. Last night he sets up Sean Monahan for the game winner with just a perfect pass in overtime. He seems to have nerves of steel. I really like this kid. He's come out of nowhere, absolutely nowhere, and I doubt if the Flames can send him back to the American Hockey League. I just think he's mm-hmm. that good. And then they call up Marcus Granlund, Mikael Granlund's younger brother, who plays in Minnesota. They know how good the Minnesota Granlund is, but a lot of people didn't know how good the Flames Granlund was. Well, they're finding out. This kid's good. I don't know whether he'll be sent back to the American League either. So all of these factors have made them 8-4-2. And everyone's scratching their head, maybe even myself. I kind of look at them. But I do know one thing. This is as close a team as I've been involved with since the 2004 Flames that went to the Stanley Cup Final. And I'm not just pulling your leg. They really are. They're close.
From a chemistry perspective, you mean?
Absolutely. They like each other.
Wow, all right.
And that's not easy to find. Dressing rooms are hard places to be, Greg. I really don't know how much time you've spent in NHL dressing rooms and traveled with teams on an exclusive basis. But when you do, you can tell when they're not close. You can tell when there's a division. Simple things like when you get to a hotel and they go out for supper, how many guys go out together and how many break up into several different units. Well, I've seen that in the Flames in the past. In past years, it's been prevalent. This year, they're all together. And that makes a major difference. They play together. And if I might make a comparison between teams, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, but it's obvious. If you take the two Alberta teams so far this year and you see how they play and what they do to win games when they win, you'll see a big difference between the two. This team will do anything for themselves together as a group. They're not individuals. They're truly a team, and that's why they're tough to play against. I mean, they might fade as the year goes on, given just the pure talent level and the difficulty of the Western Conference, but it won't be because they're not a unified group, because they certainly are.
Great stuff, Roger. Oh, and to answer your question, as a blogger, I've never been in a National Hockey League locker room, as you know. I just work out of the basement and don't wear pants. That's my lot in life.
Well, you know what? I'm an old-timer, Greg, and I just don't know. To be honest with you, I'm one of those guys that is dying to find out what social media experts like yourself, how you've evolved. And I'm not being mean either. I'm not.
No, I'm kidding.
I've traveled the buses for 12, 14 years, and when I was in junior and doing other things, and then traveling in the NHL now for going on 25 years. And I think you have a very interesting perspective, but I think it's kind of neat to know the other side of it. There's so much about hockey teams that are deeper than just on the surface, deeper than you can find on the internet. And that's the fascinating thing about the new media.
It's incredible. It's the most valuable thing in the world to have beat writers. And that's why it does piss me off when some of our friends in the media have their papers cut back and not send them on the road, in some cases, and mostly in American cities, because how invaluable is that information? And like you said, that observation of these teams when they're away from home. I mean, it tells you, it speaks volumes to chemistry issues. It speaks volumes to discipline issues. It speaks volumes about the team when you see them and how they interact on the road. So you're completely right. I mean, it's where you need to be, for sure.
Well, that being said, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, I think the perspective that is gained from those by watching video or analyzing and having the time to analyze from an office or blog, et cetera, from your viewpoint is good, because it allows us that may at times become too close to have perspective on situations. It's an interesting time in the media. I'm fascinated by it. I started in 1978, and I'm fascinated on how this new media has allowed the National Hockey League to be scrutinized, covered fairly or unfairly, and how significant it is for the game. And you have to embrace it, and I do. I just find it fascinating.
Awesome stuff. Well, thank you, Roger. And thanks for your time today, sir. We'll catch up with you again and hopefully get Jeffrey on the horn next time. We'll all have a big old reunion.
Well, you know what? I guess I can put up with that for a little bit of time, for sure. But they call me after I would say December 20th, they'll have played the Western Conference exclusively from about the 22nd of November on, and then we're going to know a lot more about the Calgary Flames.
Awesome, sir. It's a date. Thank you so much, Roger Millions of Sportsnet. He is, of course, the man who tells us all we need to know about the Calgary Flames. Two things. I was born a year before Roger started in the media. I'm going to let that marinate for a second. Second of all, I was being very self-deprecating, and I think Roger thought that he was taking a shot at me. I feel really bad about that because I was just being self-deprecating. And by no means was I offended by anything that Roger said. It's been a weird morning for your boy and established media types, as anyone who's been following my social interaction with Dean Brown, former guest of this podcast and probably never again guest of this podcast, will no doubt notice. So Fleury, by the way, 575 against the cap. Now, that number is significant because according to Cap Geek, based on what we're going to have next season, that actually slots him 13th in the National Hockey League insofar as his cap hit, right behind Jonathan Quick, who, of course, is on a 10-year deal. Fleury, just a 4-year deal. I know he's got his detractors. I know that as a playoff goaltender, you'd like to have an ace in the hole to make sure that Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't implode again, although he obviously was a bit better than he had been in previous seasons. But you tell me, you find me another competent regular season goalie that you know is not going to be the issue. That's that much better than Marc-Andre Fleury that's making 575. I mean, the bottom line for me on Fleury is that he's a known quantity. He's a good backstop in the regular season. I mean, other teams have all you're looking for him to do is not implode. Not be that guy that he was against the Flyers. Not be the guy who lost his gig to Vokoun. I'm begrudgingly a Fleury fan. Is it fun to make fun of him when things go south? Of course it is. But I think that he is a competent regular season goalie, and locking him up for 4 years, I think is a smart move for the Penguins at that rate. I don't know. Maybe this next guest can give us from perspective because he's obviously seen the best and worst of Marc-Andre Fleury against his Washington Capitals. John Press, you know him as the proprietor of Japers Rink on the SB Nation Network, and he joins us on this very podcast to talk about the Caps, Ovechkin, and now, because of the breaking news, Marc-Andre Fleury. JP, what say you on this Fleury contract, sir?
Well, to be honest, I don't know that I'm in the best position to be talking about signing longtime Penguins to big deals right now, so I might just back off on it. I mean, in general, I loathe spending big money on goaltenders, especially once they reach that age. So I really don't like this for Pittsburgh. I like it for everyone else in the Metro Division and everybody else who has to go up against Crosby and Malkin on a nightly basis. So that's my take on it. I mean, I don't think it was the best move that they've made.
But your franchise has gone through goaltenders like most of us go through Kleenex. I mean, at the very least, you have to tip your cap to stability with the Penguins, don't you?
I guess if stability is your thing, that's great. But I think, you know, one thing that the Caps have shown is that if you're developing young goalies, you can let them move on and let the next guy come in on a cheap, manageable contract. You know, if Braden Holtby doesn't turn out to be the guy here in Washington, or, you know, he demands too much money or whatever, maybe Philip Grubauer is right behind him to come in for a couple years at a low cost to the team. So, you know, in general, I think that goalies are unpredictable, and with a few exceptions at the extremes, you know, I think that the differences among them aren't that big. So I don't really like spending a lot of money on that position.
All right, let's move on to the Capitals. So Jamie Rivers, of all people, lit a fire under Capitals fans last night, tweeting, "I feel for Barry Trotz. He's a great coach, but as long as number eight is his captain, it will all be all about number eight and not about the success of the team. JP, you have once in a while had to step up to the plate and defend the virtue of Alex Ovechkin. What say you to the Jamie Rivers criticism that the Caps are screwed as long as Ovechkin is the captain and the center of the team?
I mean, I don't think that there's much validity to it. I think that, as we all know, this game's more about more than just one guy for any one team. And, you know, as far as what's going on so far this year for the Caps, there's been no problems with Ovechkin's play. You know, he went through a bit of a drought there for a few games, and he got depressing and maybe reverted to some of his old habits. But, you know, Alex Ovechkin's minus two last night or whatever isn't the reason they lost that game. Alex Ovechkin's plus minus throughout the season so far isn't why they're losing the games. I mean, he's dominating puck possession in a way that he hasn't in years. And, as long as he comes, if they're going to send Alex Ovechkin out every night and score three out of every five goals that goes in while he's on the ice at even strength, you know, before you even get to his power play production, I think that they'll take that and be thrilled beyond belief with it. So, you know, I don't think that Alex Ovechkin is a problem right now, or certainly not the problem right now.
Yeah, and again, it's one of these situations like last night. So Ovechkin gets called out by somebody, completely ignoring the fact that Mike Green was a minus four. And if you ask me about, like, the reason the Capitals have tread water, the reason the Capitals haven't ascended to the elite in the conference, there's a certain holy trinity of things you need to compete, right? You need a center, which they have. You need a goalie, which they've had intermittently. And you need a number one defenseman, which they had maybe for 2 years and then never had again because of Green's injuries or because he's just not the player we all thought he was going to be. The contract given to Mike Green and the diminishing returns of Mike Green are as important to me as anything else as to why this team hasn't met the expectations that have been placed on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'd go further than just saying Mike Green. I mean, it was probably George McPhee's biggest failing when he was here, was addressing the blue line adequately. You know, that they went through years of guys like Sean Morrison playing, you know, or Jeff Schultz playing top pair minutes with Mike Green. And, you know, right now they've, Brian McClellan, one of the things he's done is address that blue line. They've got the deepest blue line that they've had probably since they went to the Cup in 1998. And, they're still trying to figure out what they're doing back there and making some mistakes along the way. But, you know, I think that, you point to the game-winning goal last night and Matt Niskanen blows a tire and then it's just a full-on goat rodeo, you know, with Niskanen Green and no idea what they were really doing on that play. Sure, if you want to look at Ovechkin's back check there, that, you know, maybe you want a little more hustle out of him on that, but I put him at most as the third most culpable guy back there. And, you know, what we've seen so far is this team's making some bad turnovers and bad defensive coverage, and they're getting a lot of bad bounces against them. I mean, they're a much better team right now than their record would indicate.
Are they a much better team than what they were last season under Adam Oates?
Oh, my God. I mean, it's not even close. They, you know, the one thing I'd add to the thing they're not getting right now is the goaltending, in addition to the coverage and the turnovers and the bad luck. But, you know, some of what they've done in the off season, you know, they got halfway to where they are now simply by firing Adam Oates. I think that was an addition by subtraction move from the get-go. Then you bring in a coach who has some idea what he's doing and maybe bump it up a little bit more. You bring in guys like Niskanen and even Orpik instead of playing guys like Carrick or John Erskine. And, you know, you get a little bit further along the road. So, I mean, they went from a bottom five possession team last year to right now they're a top five team. I mean, I'm not sure that they're necessarily going to stay there, but it's a night and day difference in this team. The shot suppression numbers are just incredibly impressive to me. And, you know, the the underlying numbers are much more show the difference between this club and last year's club much more clearly than the record or the goal differential does right now. So I expect the record and the goal differential to catch up to the underlying numbers before too long.
When you hear Philip Forsberg's name, does your sphincter clench?
It's difficult, you know. you sit there. There are these things that your head knows, and then there are these things that your heart knows. And, you know, Philip Forsberg, you know you should move on and everything. But, yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's just like, you know, like I've been saying about the possession numbers being good and the team's going to come around and everything. You know, that's my head talking. But as a fan, it's still, you know, winning the possession battles and losing the games gets old fast, you know? So, I mean, you're a Devils fan, you know that. So, you know, I mean, the Forsberg trade is regrettable. It was regrettable. But that was a while ago under a different management. So hopefully things are a little better now.
Two more for you, sir, and I thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedule.
It is my pleasure.
Your thoughts on the Eastern Conference so far, what surprised you in a positive or negative way about the teams the Capitals compete with?
You know, it's still early. It's hard to say. I think that to a large extent, the Metropolitan Division is what I expected it to be. You know, Pittsburgh sort of running away with things. And then just a big jumbled up mess behind them. I expected Carolina to be at the bottom of the division, and I expect them at some point before too long to end up there. But, I mean, it's a division that has, you know, Pittsburgh at the top. I think they have a plus 22 goal differential or something. And then the Caps, like plus two, are the only other team with a positive goal differential in the entire division. So, you know, that sort of stinks, but I expected a little bit more out of those some of those teams, you know, maybe the Islanders, certainly the Rangers, you would think, or the Devils, and Columbus, obviously hit by a lot of injuries. Over in the other division, you know, it's still early. I expect probably a little more out of Boston and Montreal than I've seen, but I think that it's a conference that is wide open, and whoever can stay healthy and maybe make the right move and gel could do some damage in the conference when it's all said and done.
And finally, with the District of Columbia legalizing marijuana for recreational use last night on election night, how do you think that's going to affect pre-game activities for Capitals home games?
That's a hell of a question. I don't know. I mean, we're not there yet in D.C., and we'll see just how much Congress lets D.C. do its own thing. That's always an issue. But I don't know. You'll be here for the Winter Classic. Let's hang out.
Oh, that'd be a ton of fun. And do you think there's a chance that Ted Leonsis, if Congress does approve it, would authorize there to be a official Capitals bong night? Sponsored by Geico, most likely.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that might depend. Is Mike Green staying around, or they changing? Yeah, what's going on with that? You know, I could see the Green Bond being a hit.
I would to being a hit, you say, in a little punny way.
Yeah.
JP, you are a gentleman and a scholar. If you don't follow him on Twitter, please do. It's much more than simply Capitals talk. One of the shrewdest and smartest appliers of advanced stats in this business, and a good friend of mine. And you, sir, thank you for joining us on this podcast. You've classed up the
joint.
Hey,
thanks for having me.
JP, Japers Rink. If they legalized marijuana in Ottawa, would they have a Radek bong night? That's my question. They'd have to, right? Give out the Radek bong in Ottawa if they legalized it. Election night was so. I feel like I was much more of a political guy when I was in D.C. following all the races and stuff. Last night I was just kind of like half-hearted doing it. A couple of them I had my eye on. Happy Scott Brown lost. I'm sure this next guy is very happy Scott Brown lost, too. Ryan Lambert is, of course, a columnist on Puck Daddy. He writes four times a week now, What We Learn on Monday, his NCAA column, which people seem to love on Tuesday. the power rankings on Wednesday and trending topics on Friday, and he joins us now. Are you happy to see Scott Brown fall in defeat, sir, that carpetbagger?
Oh, yeah, he's the worst.
It was the audacity, right, to go across state lines. And then people were asking him if he would keep his zip code if he lost the election, and his response was, what kind of question is that?
Yeah, because the answer is no.
Listen, I talked to Roger Millions before, so I feel like we're so heavy on the Flames already, but I do feel like it would be doing a disservice to you if I didn't at least address how good they are so far this season. Your thoughts on the Calgary Flames, sir?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can say all this stuff about, they're really working together for each other and that kind of thing. The reason they're winning is that Jonas Hiller has been out of his mind great, and that's it. They're bottom five in possession numbers, and when the goaltending goes away, guess what? So too will all these wins they've been racking up. But, you know, with that having been said, Jonas Hiller obviously is better than Kerry Ramo and Rito Berra, who they had last year. So, you know, they were always going to be better than they were, and I didn't think they were probably going to be bottom five. But I think that that's also foolish because, you know, when are you ever going to get a shot at a Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel again, right?
Yeah.
So.
Rito Berra was always sort of the Jared Stahl of the Berra family, you know, Yogi, Dale, and then Ritu, sort of the, and Yogi as well. Ryan Lambert, you hit the nail on the head with Hiller's performance and everything else, but I have to imagine that if, like Roger said, if you took the two Alberta teams, it is kind of stunning to think how much more positivity there is probably around the Flames than there is around the Oilers, despite the fact that Oilers have all of these really high draft picks populating their roster.
Well, sure. I mean, the Oilers were such a mess for such a long time. This is, I think, the first time they've kept a coach for more than 1 year in 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe four. So, you know, I can't get too mad. They're just starting to figure out this whole, like, oh, maybe we should get guys with good possession numbers and maybe have defensemen who aren't terrible all the time. And they're still kind of messing that up. I mean, they sent Martin Marincin down to the AHL to start the year, despite the fact that he was, you know, unequivocally their best defenseman on paper entering the season. So it didn't make a lot of sense, and they're kind of figuring all that stuff out. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs or anything this year, and I still think they probably finish higher than the Flames.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I don't know. I might take that bet. I don't know. It just broke during the show, and I'm sure that you have some opinions about it. The Marc-Andre Fleury extension, 4 years, 23 and change, 5.75 cap hit for the Penguins. Your thoughts on Marc-Andre Fleury getting extended?
Why? Just why? You know, like, I was listening earlier, and you said he's like a good regular season goalie, and I'm not even sure. He's fine. Good is stretching it. I looked it up, and of the goalies, so 26 goalies since 2010 have started 200 or more games. What number do you think Marc-Andre Fleury comes in at, save percentage-wise? Like, what do you think he's ranked out of 26?
Out of 26, I'd say 22.
Yeah, you were close. It's 20. So
okay.
You can go out and get a pretty, like, you know, you can get a goalie who's better than him on the open market pretty much anywhere, right? Like, he's the 20th best goalie over the last 5 years or whatever, and that, you know, that's worth $5.75 million for 4 years, and, you know, these are going to be his decline years, too. He's, what, 29, 30? He's not a kid anymore. And, you know, you couple that with the fact that I want to say his save percentage since he had that really great run to the cup that they didn't win, I want to say his save percentage in the playoffs is like .897. So I don't know how you justify this other than like, you think he's nice or whatever. Like, they don't want to test the market is basically what I think.
That's exactly. You know what it's like, dude? It's like when you're buying a house or something and you pay a little bit more to be in a safe neighborhood for peace of mind. It's a peace of mind investment. Like, you're creating a problem for yourself you don't need to have if you jettison Fleury and try something else. I mean, he's obviously tight with Sid. That's part of it. It's creating a problem for yourself in the regular season you don't currently have. And if you want to believe that last season was indicative of him stabilizing himself in the postseason and not being a complete joke of a liability, I like this investment more than most. And maybe that just means that I'm more worried about the alternative, which is floundering around trying to find somebody who will stabilize the position when you already have somebody in place that at least for the next 2 years, you know what you're getting out of him. I don't know. I don't mind it as a peace of mind investment for the Penguins.
He's a league average goalie. I mean, and look,
he's not a liability, though. He's not a liability, though.
He's average. He's not good either. Like, he's fine. He's the definition of fine. He's got a .914 save percentage over the last five seasons, and that's probably right around league average. I bet it's like .913.5 is league average. So,
but isn't it like the same thing as like when you fire your coach? Like, okay, it's time for him to go, but who are you going to bring in that's going to improve it? I'm not talking about some shit-tastic team that has to fire its coach. I mean like a team that's middling. You know, like the Penguins.
Sure.
When they fired Bilesman, like who are you going to bring in? Everybody's like, oh my God, Babcock, and they're like, well, he's not coming. We'll bring this other guy in for a year. You know, I just feel like. What would be the person you would bring in to improve that position if not to have it be Marc-Andre Fleury next year?
It's not necessarily that they need to improve it. They just need to not spend $575 on it, right? Like, if you can go out and get a Rito Barra, or not Rito Barra, see, now you have me, Jonas Hiller.
Yeah.
If you can go get Jonas Hiller for, you know, 3.5 or whatever, that's 2 million more you can spend on like shoring up the Penguins' depth problem, right?
Yeah.
Like they're not gonna score like this all season, obviously.
No.
But I think that Rutherford did do a good job this summer in bringing in guys who are gonna make sure that bottom six wasn't a complete disaster, which it has been for the last couple of years or more.
Right.
You gotta free up that money somewhere, and you know, starting with your literally league average goalie seems like a pretty reasonable place to do it.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree on this pressing issue of Marc-Andre Fleury's sustainability.
Okay.
Have you taken a victory lap yet over the Colorado Avalanche?
No, I mean no, because you know. How many times can you say, like, yeah, see, you guys were wrong about this team that got a crazy high PDO despite garbage possession numbers? Like, in a best-case scenario for Calgary, they do the exact same thing and then collapse next year, right? And
right.
When that happens, am I going to be, like, you can't just be like, see, I told you the Flames were bad, because obviously the Flames were bad. Like, who thought the Avalanche was good outside of the state of Colorado? Nobody.
And yeah, and they're all high.
Right, exactly. And now yeah, Oregon exactly. has it too, so.
So there you go. So now the Winterhawks.
That NHL expansion team.
Everybody's going to be putting over the Winterhawks as being something special. It's terrible.
That's right.
I think obviously they were hit with some injuries and stuff beforehand, and maybe they can rocket back into this race or whatever, but like. That blue line, man. That blue, more so than any other thing about that team, even more so than what the analytics told us. That blue line played so far over its head last year, just to be average, and then had Varlamov bail him out.
Right, and that's the thing too. Varlamov's still great this year. Like the fact that they're still not winning should tell you a lot about how troubled this team was always going to be, right? And then, you know, I said it in the power rankings, but Wazo, why are we 0-5 in the shootout and overtime? And it's like, I don't know, you won like 18 games in the shootout and overtime last year, so you can't keep that up forever.
Mm-hmm. I can't get
too up about it.
You can, well, yes, you can. I mean, it's what you do. You and I both are creatures of emotion when it comes to these things. That's how it should
be.
That's why people like reading you.
Yes and no, like... It's just, what am I going to say that, like, I haven't already said 1,000 times, like, see, Patrick Waugh isn't a good coach. Yeah, no kidding. We all knew that.
Finally, sir, you have, of course, a special affinity for the city of Boston and for the Boston Bruins. Not that they're your favorite team, but I know that you like talking about them now and again. Your thoughts on the homecoming of one Sean Thornton last night, a warrior on the Merlot line.
Like you would have thought that Wayne Gretzky was coming back to Edmonton for the first time. But it was Sean Thornton coming back and just being like, yeah, guys, I still say funny stuff sometimes. And everybody being like, oh, tell us more about that. How's Florida? We miss you so much.
Like Gretzky, he's trying to grow the game in a warm weather climate. I mean, there is a connection to be drawn there.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
so you didn't enjoy the montage?
No, I didn't enjoy the montage. Everything you need to know about the way Boston feels about Sean Thornton and how insane it is there was a column on ESPN Boston last year after the Bruins said, like, we're not going to re-sign him, that was like, or Neely, Terry O'Reilly, Sean Thornton. And it's like, what? How can you say that?
I don't believe that that was an actual column on ESPN because Joe Haggerty doesn't write for ESPN.
Exactly.
All right, Ryan Lambert, you're a gentleman and a scholar, and thank you again for joining. It's been far too long since we've had you on the podcast, I realized today. That's why I wanted to ask you on.
I keep saying that.
I know. What happened to the podcast you were doing with Gentilly and Bourne? What happened to that podcast?
We all got very lazy about being able to do it, and none of us wanted to like edit any of the audio or anything like that. So
yeah,
if only we had a producer like you guys.
Yeah, I know, that's literally the only reason why this podcast happens, is because of producer Matt. I mean, like, in the fact that Merrick and I just have to plug a thing into a box and talk for an hour. If it wasn't for Matt, no one would hear this shit. Which, again, if you want to blame Matt for something, if without Matt, no one would hear this shit. So there you go. Either a positive or a negative in life is Matt Brown. Ryan Lambert.
Send your email, Matt.
Yeah, exactly. Read his power rankings today. Join us back on Friday for his trending topics. And as always, dip in and read what we learned and his awesome NCAA column on Tuesdays. Very good job with that, sir. I got a lot of good feedback
thanks
on the Twitters about you repping college hockey on Puck Daddy. Thanks, Lambert. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Later, bud.
As they say in Canada, ladies and gentlemen, he's a beauty. Ryan Lambert. A couple of going postals before we go today, because we got to get out of here by 3. This is from Brandon. Hey, guys, if you could book the NHL like the WWE, where the Stanley Cup Final is your WrestleMania main event, who is your ideal matchup? Who's the heel? Who's the babyface? Essentially, it's not who you think will make the finals, but who you would book entertainment-wise. Most entertaining matchup out of the – well, you know, there's a couple combinations. Having the Leafs in the final would be the single most compelling thing in hockey, only because of the drought, because of the complete mania in Toronto. The question then becomes, who would you want on the other side of the bracket to prevent them from winning? Because they'd be a babyface for Toronto, they'd be a heel for everyone else. So who would you want on the other side of the bracket to prevent them from winning? Now, in theory, it should probably be Chicago, because everyone loves Taves and Kane. They love the Blackhawks. They're an easy face, as we saw when they played the Boston Bruins. There was also a part of you, though, that would like to see the Leafs have to go through the biggest dog on the block, and I think at this point it might be the Los Angeles Kings. Then there's a part of you that says, well, what if it was going to be an Armageddon matchup of teams that never win, and then it would be Leafs and Sharks would be the thing. That would be interesting. Also, if you want to make the Penguins the heel and Sid the heel, then Penguins Chicago is the matchup that I think everybody would love to see. And then finally, the other one off the top of my head, that would be, of course, the Capitals and the Ducks, for obvious reasons. Oh my God, Boudreau versus the Capitals, Ovechkin with a chance to win the Cup versus his old coach, that some claim he ran out of town. This is from Joe Pack. With Sean Avery bailing in his off-Broadway performance, who is your favorite successful Renaissance hockey player? That's a good question. Who's the person who left hockey and went on to other things? I guess the only answer, because I think this guy is probably the king of such things, would be Ken Dryden. a guy who, even during his playing days, transcended hockey in the things that he talked about, the things he was interested in. And again, about Avery, like, that's one of the things I loved about the guy was that, you know, his interests went far beyond what was happening on the ice. But now I think this last thing and a couple of his more recent things have sort of rendered him more punchline than anything else. Finally, Adam Haynes further, with an amazing last name. He goes further than Ryan Haynes, for you Puck Daddy Radio fans. I'm sure you guys have addressed this a little while back, but in light of the NBA clearing the way for on-jersey ads with its latest TV deal, what would your reaction be if the NHL followed suit? I know they've openly discussed this in the last few months, but I'm curious as what you think of the possibility of the NHL going the route of the Euros and adding on-uni ads. I'm also curious what you think fan reaction would be. I, for one, don't love the idea, but if it's not massive, I guess I wouldn't have any issue with it. But I have a feeling this puts me in the minority. I respect the sanctity of the jersey. I would hate to see advertisements besmirch an NHL sweater. I agree that they're probably coming there at some point. But we talked about this last year vis-a-vis the tie-down rule and whether or not that was being implemented to ensure that advertising wasn't covered up by one's hockey pants. If you want to throw an ad on the ass of the jersey, on the ass flap of the jersey, that'd be fine by me. I just don't want anything that covers the logo or F's with the logo. I like a good, pristine look. If you want to put ads on the helmets, that's fine. It's all coming at some point. I mean, there's no question that that is ad revenue left on the table. Are we going to see ads on jerseys, or are we going to see expansion first? I think we might see ads on jerseys. I mean, this is a copycat world we live in with professional sports. People take from hockey. Hockey takes from other things. The fact that the NBA has sort of cleared the decks for advertising on jerseys would indicate that former NBA executive Gary Bettman would probably follow suit at some point. We got to get out of here for other stuff that's going to happen in the studio where Matty Brown is. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Roger Millions talking Flames, JP talking Caps, Ryan Lambert talking all things hockey. Apologies to everyone whose Twitter feed I jammed up with my peculiar mini feud with Dean Brown this morning. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can just follow along. I'm kind of done with it. The moment someone decides to stoop to the "I'm gonna sue you if you don't get off my property" thing, like we're 9 years old and having a fight at the bus stop, that's usually the point in which I bail. So anyways, number of weird looks I've gotten in the last hour here in the Glass Cage of Emotion, 35. With that, it's time for me to go. I think someone else needs to use the room. Back tomorrow for more fun. Then Friday, Merrick's back, and that means one thing and one thing only: a game show Friday. All right, everybody, thanks, bye.